Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I'm your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmers.
Hello, Judy. Hello, viewers and listeners. Judy, tell folks the title of today's episode.
It is The Chaos Kid Phenomenon, an interview with Larry Bellotta.
Yeah, and he was a lot of fun to talk to. Mm-hmm. And his schooling is the school of hard knocks, you know?
It certainly seems
and
to be.
Really an I think a very interesting story mm-hmm. he's got of his own life. And he's not a young guy. He says, me, the old guy. and he was in a marriage for a very long time.
Over 40 years.
Right. And his wife had passed away. That's what ended the marriage. But he talked about how he transformed it.
Right.
And how he transformed it.
He transformed from a lousy hell marriage to
yes.
One that was much better.
Yeah.
And
so
loving, and it worked.
Yep. So, do check out that interview.
And now he's teaching other people who are in his situation on how they can turn theirs around, too.
Exactly. So check that out. But before we go to our interview, we'll put in a few words for our exciting products and developments and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Starting with, what do you want to start with?
Why don't we start with the book that started it all, Reigniting the Spark. Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
That was the first book that it wasn't the first book that I ever published, actually. That was a statistics book in 1986.
Yeah, this is the first book that you've published on couples.
Yes, the first book I published. I just had to mention that. It's like, no, Amazon has me down for a couple other books, too.
Yeah, well,
way back in the day.
If you're into statistics, you can buy Bruce's statistics.
You can. I can't resist mentioning. If you buy the hard copy version, it has in it a 5 1/4 inch floppy disk. That I don't think anybody has any equipment that will ever read. But by golly, that's what it has in it, because I wrote a statistical package in mm-hmm. 1985.
Yeah. Well,
that was included.
Wow.
But moving right along.
1985.
Yeah.
Some of us weren't even born.
Wait.
Well, I don't mean me, but I mean some of us out there.
Some of our listeners, that's true. Some of our children, for example. 2 of our children
that's
were not
true.
Yet born. Yes,
that's true.
At that point. So, and you've got another book you're holding
I've got another book, Bruce's latest book, called It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong.
Yes, also available from the Amazon site and also various other places. I do want to put in a plug for the book that I actually mentioned this in our interview, that my working title of the book I'm working on now, and the reason I'm mentioning it is because I'm asking you all folks out there to help me out with this.
Yes.
So the working title of the book is Betrayal, Faith, and Forgiveness. And what I'm looking for, if you are willing to share them, of course, are your stories of betrayal. And they could be stories of you being betrayed. They could be stories of you being the one doing the betraying. You know, in large or small ways, all of us have been on both sides of that. But I'm talking about the big ways, mostly, and the effects of that on you. And if you're willing to chat with me, I would be happy to set up a time to have a private chat with you. I actually, somebody wrote in, because I put this in my newsletter. I'll plug my newsletter in a second.
Okay.
And my most recent edition of my newsletter, I mentioned this, and somebody wrote back and talked about her story as well. And I hadn't heard back from her yet, but I actually offered if she and her partner wanted to come on our podcast. And you may not want to do that if you want to keep it quiet. And I absolutely guarantee any stories you tell me that appear in the book will not be exactly your story. They will not be identifiable to any one person. But I am trying to get a sense of that. I've got a lot of material already from the 30 years I've been doing couples therapy.
And of course, we'll change your name too.
Of course, yeah, names will change and identifying details change as well. But anyway, I'm putting that out there, folks. To get in touch with me, if you go to ctn7.com, there's a contact form there. If you just send directly bruce@brucechalmer.com, that works too. I would love to hear from you on that. I mentioned the newsletter.
Yes, so we might as well bring up how you can get some.
You can get a freebie.
You can get a freebie.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, Bruce's booklet, 7 Words to Jumpstart Your Love Life. So if you subscribe to Bruce's newsletter, you will get a free PDF of 7 Words to Jumpstart Your Love Letter. And it's shorter than his
love
books.
Life,
love
saying.
Life. Love Life.
I don't know how to jumpstart your love letter, but I do know how to jumpstart your love letter.
Yeah, so it's a shorter book. It's a booklet.
Yeah.
So, you know, like as a novella as opposed to a novel.
Exactly. It's a really a compilation of a lot of the ideas that I talk about at more greater length than my other books. And it's a neat little book, and it's got pictures,
mm-hmm.
A bunch of stock photos in it, because I think it's kind of cool.
Right.
Please
and it
do
can
that.
Also be purchased, like all of Bruce's books can be purchased on Amazon.
Yeah, you can purchase it, but of course, I'll give it to you for free, so why do that? You know, I'll give the PDF.
That's what I'm saying. They can be purchased, but you can get it for free.
That particular one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do want to mention, so how do you sign up for my newsletter? If you go to ctn7.com, a box will appear.
Mm-hmm.
Magically, and if you click on that box, because what it says on it is click here to sign up for Dr. Chalmers' newsletter, by golly, do that, and you will get that automatically.
There you go.
So, let's put in a word for our sponsor.
Our sponsor is The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber.
And this has got some additional buzz recently because there was an ad that showed up in Hadassah magazine, for those of you who know what that is,
mm-hmm.
That was mentioning...
In their Guide to Jewish Literature section.
Yep. And it's got some really interesting, really very positive reviews on Amazon.com.
Yes, I know. All of them have 5 stars,
I noticed. Indeed. Mm-hmm. And Laria, can't seem to get Laria to come on our show, but she's just really difficult to get a hold of sometimes.
Mm.
And I can't get you and Laria in the same room,
mm.
hint, hint. But the point being, Laria, we do include Laria in a presentation that we do.
We do. Video interviews.
We have video interviews. Yeah. If you go to lariazilber.com, you can see those video interviews.
Or
you'll
go on TikTok, too.
Go on TikTok. They're there as well.
Go to Laria Zilber.
At Laria Zilber on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those are ways. And we highly
and
recommend
I did do the audiobook for
yes,
her.
Yes, yes. Judy did the audiobook.
So if you want to get it as an audiobook, it's my narration.
It is, and it is... How can I testify to this without crossing lines of propriety? I would just say it's very in accordance with the erotic nature of the book.
Mm-hmm.
How's that?
Yeah.
It has that effect. That's the voice I fell in love
with,
folks.
That's the kind of voice I have. What can I tell you?
There it is. If that doesn't tempt you, what will, you know? So without further ado, let's go on to our
interview,
and we will see you on the other side.
Our guest today is Larry Bellotta. Larry is an author and speaker specializing in midlife crisis and the creator of a series of programs designed to help bring couples back from the brink of divorce and come back stronger than before. Larry lived in an unhappy marriage hell, as he puts it, for 27 years. His explorations of the psychology of relationships led him to insights that helped him change his life and transformed his marriage into a thriving partnership. Larry, welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words.
Thank you. I love the 7 words.
Yes, thank you. Yes, that's our brand. Yeah. So we always like to start when we're interviewing guests, we always like to start off with a question, you know, how did you get into the work that you do? Tell us something about your own journey that brought you to where you are.
So I was in a marriage with a woman who was built and programmed by her parents, and I was built and programmed by my parents, and she was a very strong-natured person, and I was a very soft-hearted person. So there's our first problem. She's strong-natured, hard-natured. I'm soft-natured. So there's going to be a problem already. And then her parents built her to be a fighter. And so she's not only strong-willed, but she's also programmed to fight. Well, I'm not programmed to fight at all. She's programmed to fight. I'm not programmed to fight. So we got a problem. But we were also programmed by both of our sets of parents to be married and miserable and stay married under all conditions. So we're locked in this mental construction and we can't get away. So what I had to do is I had to become the learner, because she's not a person who learns anything. She learns by her own conclusions. And I had to learn by searching through all kinds of worldly things, to search psychology and spirituality and all kinds of insights through those means. But she didn't want any of that. And so I was the learner, she was the non-learner. And so we stayed married in this point where I hit the 27-year mark, 27 years in the marriage. And what I did is I actually learned to love myself. And I didn't love myself because I had abandonment and neglect. And so the three big abandonment, abuse, and neglect are the things that create the chaos in our subconscious minds. And that's what we hold on to. And then that stays in us. And in between 35 and 45, that comes for us. And so what most of us do is we fight that. We resist it. And so I fought it and fought it and fought it. So being married to her, the strong woman, I had to learn. And so she was my, Richard Schwartz calls it, your tormentor. Your tormentor, a mentor who is tormenting you. Mm-hmm. So that's what she was doing. She was tormenting me.
I'll throw in for our listeners, and maybe Judy might have picked that up. I actually got a little bit of training from Richard Schwartz. He's the internal family systems.
Yes.
And, which I've often applied in my work as well. It's really interesting. Just to mention again for our listeners, the essential idea there is that we're all walking around a whole bunch of different people.
Yes.
You have to honor them because they're all important. And that notion, of tormentor. In other words, it seems like a tormentor, but it's also mentoring you. And that's how you were experiencing your wife, it sounds like.
So that's what I learned from. I learned from her. And because people say, well, do you have a degree? And so they think the only way you can learn is through a school. Mm-hmm. And so my school was her. That's so at that point, at that 27-year point that I was in this hell, because inside I was fighting her. I was resisting her all I could, every way I could. I couldn't learn acceptance. I couldn't learn forgiveness. I couldn't learn anything. And so I was resisting all the time. So even though I wasn't a fighter, I was a resister. And so as you know, what you resist persists. And so I was getting more of what I wanted. And so what I realized where the secret was, I had to love myself. And so for all of us in marriages, ultimately, there's so many subjects and topics we talk about, but when you finally love yourself, you feel good about yourself, and that gives a security to you that everybody can feel. Mm-hmm. But when you have no sense of love and you have no ability to love yourself, you give off an energy that says, well, you can treat me badly because I've treated myself badly. Mm-hmm. And so, the idea of the mirror, that people mirror back what you give out. So that was what was happening at the 27-year mark. So finally, when I finally came to those conclusions, which took about 6 months, I finally realized I could be happy in any circumstance. I was changing the environment of my mind. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I finally realized. I had to change the environment of my mind because she was not the problem. I was living in the problem in the way I saw everything. In other words, my perceptions were running my life. Mm-hmm. So once I learned that, I fell in love with myself, and then I was able to love her as she was. And so that was my big revelation at the 27-year mark. So we stayed married 40 years until she got cancer and she died in 2019. But I stuck with her the whole time. And without learning what I learned about, loving myself, I couldn't have gotten through it.
Yeah.
So I talked to a lot of people for the first time, and I can feel the energy if they don't love themselves. And I can't say, you need to love yourself. Because they don't know what that means. What does that mean? Love my body? And so, no, it's not that. It's all in your mind. It's a mind thing. And so that's what everybody struggles with. They struggle with a mind issue. And so they don't see the world the way they could see it. They don't reinterpret the world. They just see it as it is through their own perceptions. And their perceptions are made by their programming. And so
before you get there, I'm really curious if you can flesh out a little bit, like what happened. And it's interesting, had your wife not passed away, which is very sad, of course, we'd want to be interviewing her too,
Yes.
That's like, it would be fascinating to hear what she might have said. She is not here, at least in person, to be able to comment on that. But I'm curious, like, what was it like? What do you think it was like for her when she saw the changes going through you? And what did you experience from her? How did your marriage change? Is really
it was not a community.
You made this big change in yourself.
Yes.
But how did that affect her and make her?
Okay, so she didn't talk about what she was feeling because in her family, that was not allowed. Mm-hmm. So whatever change she went through, she did not talk about. All she would do is physically react to it. And so what happened when I started to go through my change, she started to, what we say, back off. She started to lessen her pressure. And that was her way of responding to the to my change, lessening her pressure. So that was a huge treat for me. Wow, how is this happening? It's happening because of what you're doing, Larry.
You said that very kindly. I mean, I'm imagining, and you can tell me if this just doesn't fit, but another way of saying, another way of saying what you just said is she stopped being so pissed off at you. Because you maybe she experienced you as, hey, this guy suddenly got nice. He's not resisting me anymore. What's going on here?
That's right. Well, when that resistance went away, she did not have the resistance she needed to keep on her forcefulness. So in the before the 27 year mark, it was really raw ego to ego energy, and it wasn't pretty at all. And so nothing was good about that because everything turned into a fight of some kind. Mm. And so somehow we managed to raise two kids, and the first one got the worst of it, and so the second one did not get the worst of it.
I've had occasion to thank my older brothers for my having had better parents than they did. Although I'm saying nothing bad about my parents, they were fine, but may they rest in peace. But my older brothers broke them in. It was,
right,
it was a lot easier.
Child.
Yeah, I'm the third, you know, it's like,
yeah,
it was,
there is a break-in period right there. So what we were is we were the youngest of all the siblings. I was the youngest in my family. She was the youngest in hers, but she did manage to get enough anger from her programmers to be forcefully very angry, as well as her strong will. Mm-hmm. And so my father was a handwriting analyst, and he analyzed her handwriting when he thought she was a girlfriend. And he said, well, it looks to me like she's going to wear the pants in the family.
I guess he got that one right.
Yeah, well, I was too young to understand what that meant. Uh-huh. So what that meant is this is a very forceful and strong personality, and you would do well to stay away. But I couldn't hear that, and I wasn't ready for it. Besides that, I secretly already married her. So he didn't know that.
Oh, is that right? Oh, wow. Yeah. By then.
The other thing that told me something was wrong is my parents and her parents never even wanted to talk or mention that each other existed. Wow. So they never met each other. So that's a huge sign. Like, they never had any interest in meeting each other or talking to each other. Excuse my my cat for his bad manners.
We can ask him some questions if he's...
Yes, he's got lots of opinions.
He wants to go on your lap, that's fine.
So when you talk about what
and
she
all those
did,
years your parents never met?
They never met. And the reason they never met is because they both can sense that I don't want to be around that, right? They didn't want to be around that, and they didn't want to, so the two sets of parents did not want to meet each other or talk to each other or even acknowledge they exist, even asking a question about the other. So that's how separated our programming was. Other than one thing, stay married and miserable, that was there, and that was in us. So that was the start of the 27 year mark. And then after the 27 year mark, I was just increasing my ability to learn and conclude things. And, you know, journaling was my big thing. And so I'd always constantly write everything out so I could see it and think about it. And all of that, I started to realize that she was discovering things and realizing things. And she's the one who actually introduced me to the idea of the invisible lifestyle. And she came up with...
So could you tell us about that? Because I know that's one of your things.
Yes, the invisible lifestyle. Yeah. The reason that's called the invisible lifestyle is because Marcia named it the invisible lifestyle.
Wow.
She did it because she said, you want to know why I'm so angry? They were angry. And so she's the one who taught me about that whole thing that works. And I didn't know anything like that. Hmm. So she taught me about the invisible lifestyle. And she called it, that was her name. And so the invisible lifestyle is whatever they give you in those 10 years when your brain is forming, that's all piling into the subconscious mind. Now, we don't know anything about the subconscious mind. It's just like somewhere, you know, we don't even know what a mind is. We don't even know what it looks like. But what we know is there's a mind somewhere, and it's not your brain. It's the brain, the physical brain is the translator for the mind. Mm-hmm. So wherever the mind is, it translates through the brain.
I believe they call that the hard problem.
Yes, that's right. The hard problem. That's right. Exactly.
It's like, know, we've got, we're learning more and more about the wetware, so to speak. We've learned a lot through psychology about what seems to be happening in various kinds of minds, but how those two are associated, we haven't got down yet.
That's right. Well, it's so weird because the mind is so spiritual and the brain is so physical. Yeah. But it makes sense to me that the mind would have, or the brain would be a translator for whatever the mind is. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm really interested in quantum physics, for example, mm-hmm. and I don't know, it can't even spot anything out other than saying zero point energy field. You know, I can't really talk about quantum physics very much, but it gives me a sense that quantum physics is a way to join science and spirituality together.
And I forgot who it was, and it's some quote, and I just had this little isolated quote in my mind, having read it a number of years ago. Somebody was just saying, yeah, it's consciousness all the way down. You know, they used to figure out, they'd find out the elementary particles, and they're figuring out, no matter how far down you go, it's always consciousness, which is interesting. You know, it's an interesting way of looking at it that kind of fits with what you're saying.
So what I've learned consciousness is the whole idea of separation. And the whole idea of separation is the whole idea of the ego. And so in a world of separation, a world of consciousness, you're going to be in separation in everywhere, every way, shape, and form. So that's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to get from our resistance state of mind, our way of pushing back to what we don't like in the world, our physical system of things out there. And what we want to do is we want to get to acceptance. And that's a thing we're trying to learn. We're trying to learn acceptance. But the reason we can't learn it very well is because we have this thing supplied by the ego called against energy. And against energy is the thing that really possesses us in all kinds of ways, passive aggressive, you know, outwardly aggressive, all that passive aggressive, outwardly aggressive. The pressure of against energy is really strong. And so it's very hard to get to acceptance because you can't really accept. So I came up with this idea of three stamps, the green stamp, the red stamp, and the black stamp. And so what I was illustrating was a story where an old janitor was telling a young girl that she really couldn't really get to her life of acceptance because she hated it so much, she resisted it so much, so she needed the black stamp. And so he physically uses a red stamp, a green stamp, and a black stamp to illustrate this. And so what the red stamp is I don't like it and I won't do it. So if you picture an office stamp, you know, with the red ink, right? I don't like it, I won't do it, right? And then the green stamp is I'll do it, but I won't like it. And so that's another form of resistance that is more societally acceptable. And the black stamp is, this is good, I accept it. And so that's the black stamp that creates the acceptance. And so that's what I talk about. I talk about the black stamp as the way we get to acceptance.
You know, I'm mapping some of what you're saying. I'm sure not exactly, but to my understanding of Buddhism.
Yes, there's exactly.
A lot of Buddhism in what you're talking about, that notion of, you know, the ego is sort of the source of suffering, that illusion that we're all separate.
That's right.
It creates that kind of resistance, and acceptance would be that sort of sense of, yeah, when you're able to experience that form of enlightenment, which would just recognize you're not separate from everything, then you're not clinging on to illusions and you stop suffering.
Well, this is ironic because I met a woman 3 years later who is a Buddhist.
Uh-huh. There you go.
So my energy on acceptance must have been pretty strong after talking about the black stamp for so many years.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm going in my history. After that, the 27 year mark, I was just increasing, and that's how I actually built my course. I built my course of the environment changer from all the lessons I'm learning by living with a very against energy person. Mm-hmm. And so against energy became the whole theme of the course. Getting out of against energy became the purpose of the course. How do you leave against energy? And so it all became supportive tools to help you leave against energy. Because in marriages, what really kills marriage against energy in any form is against energy. So if I have a marriage and I started out really good, then the next thing that happens in terms of the invisible lifestyle is I become my father. Mm-hmm. I literally take on the ways of my dad. And so that's what happens to men. Typically with women, they become their mothers. So if a man becomes his father and a woman becomes her mother, right? And they're living now.
I should probably explain that little aside. I spoke a little bit of Hebrew / Yiddish there for a second. I should probably, I was just sort of saying heaven forfend, but whatever. Maybe I shouldn't go more deeply into it than that.
My mother was quite the character.
She was wonderful in the way she was wonderful. And thank God you are not exactly very like her admitting. Speaking of against energy. And so it's interesting because I have a personal reason to believe sitting right next to me that not everybody turns out the same, and not all women turn out the same as their mother.
That's actually not the problem. They don't become their mothers, mm-hmm. because if they became their mothers, they take on all those qualities in one package. But yeah. That's not what happens to us. What happens to us is at times when we're tired, weak, bored, frustrated, whatever weakened condition we are, we take on the worst qualities of our parent. And so when we take it, it's a momentarily thing, you know, like that's where, you know, that accusation in marriage, you're just like your mother, you're just like your father, right? But that's what people hate. They hate that, right? when they hear that accusation.
Hear that.
Right.
Except when, you know, driving that, I do take on my mind.
You do. That's it. And you have actually some wonderful qualities of your mother. And I think I have some annoying qualities and some wonderful qualities from my parents as well. So there is, you know, we're all, that's the advantage of sexual reproduction is that it mixes up all those genes, you know, that's an important thing.
But we are all products of those who raised us.
So. We absolutely are. Yeah.
So what happens when we become the worst of our parent is that messages that's painful. This is going back to Richard Schwartz and internal family systems, is whatever is our biggest wound, our child within, is down there hurting. And so Richard's portrait is, I have a protector and I have an exile. And the exile is a little child who's in a moment in time that's very wounded and very scared and very terrified. And so this protector stands in the way, protecting that child from that terrible thing. But what was that thing? That was a moment in time. And they're stuck in that moment in time. Just when they start to really express that pain, if that pain starts to show out in the world, then the child becomes really ignited, the protector becomes ignited, everybody gets upset, and now nobody's happy. Yes. So that's why it's so useful, because Richard Schwartz was the first person to come along and say he spent 40 years studying the mind. And he said, you're not one mind, you are many. Like there's a lot of room in there.
I want to ask you about something again related to a lot of this. It just so happens, in fact, I was working on it this morning. My next book, the working title, I'm not sure this will be the final title, but the working title is Betrayal, Faith, and Forgiveness. Yes. And I know you've talked a lot about betrayal, you know, and I'm curious, you know, how do you help people handle betrayal when it happens? How do you, you know, how do you think about betrayal and how do you help people handle it?
So if we think in terms of the mind betrays, mm-hmm. and so the mind betrays, and I don't understand the mind because I don't know what the mind is. Mm-hmm. So I'm in a situation where I think I perceive betrayal. So what is a betrayal? That's going behind your back and doing something against you. Mm-hmm. And so what is that? Betrayal is against energy in action. Mm-hmm. And so now the betrayal is happening and saying, I'm not doing what you want me to do. I'm doing what I want to do. And so that becomes the betrayal. And so in order to do that, you have to be in enough against energy. Now, so why would you be in against energy? Well, you have this this child who's crying out because something's being ignited. You have a protector standing in the way and forcing a behavior that maybe you don't want to do. And then it becomes the worst of your father. And so my father, I had abandonment and I had neglect. That's what I grew up with. And so because I have abandonment and neglect, I will abandon before you abandon me. I will neglect you before you neglect me. And so that's when I get the worst of my father, I become an abandoner and a neglecter. And so now I have fallen in love with my Buddhist love of my life now. And what happens in our struggles? In our struggles, I abandon her, and in our struggles, I neglect her. So I have a story. We went on a boat ride and on a tour, and all of a sudden I was possessed by my father, and I wanted to get up from the seat and run out and go to the tour guide so I can be the first in line and so I can get the most information. That's my father right there. So I literally became him. And so she steps out of the boat and says, you left me. And I go, what? And I didn't even know I left her. I didn't know I left her. Why? Because I became my father. I became the worst of my father. So that's how it happens. You become possessed. And so I was tired at the time. I was hungry. I was a little bored because I was sitting on a boat a long time. I had all the conditions to turn on that thing. So that's how I ended up doing that kind of thing. But that's what happens to all of us. So we're living a life and we got seconds to live, you know, minutes and minutes, and which turns into years. And so we've got to be aware so much and so often to be able to not let the against energy and the protectors of the against energy take us over and become our father, become our mother. Mm-hmm. And so that becomes a lot of awareness and alertness on our part. So I have a story I call the three doors. And so she and I were in the restaurant and there were three doors. So there was an inner door, there was an outer door, and there was a car door. Okay. Now the idea of love is I have to care for her to make sure that the doors get out of the way. And so the first door I let slam in her face. And then I realized, oh my God, I just walked out of the, and this is another phenomenon I learned about my father. When I'm leaving, I'm forgetting all kinds of good behavior. So when I'm leaving a place, exiting a boat, you know, entering a door, I do terrible things. So I let the door slam in her place and I go, oh, I'm really sorry. So the second door I open and the third door I open. So three doors, got the first door wrong, got the second door right, got the third door right. And then what happened? We drove home in silence. Right. So what is that? Like, well, that's a demonstration of what love is. Love is you've got to be aware all the time. You can't let the first door slam in her face while you open the second and the third door. That's not good enough. It's got to be all three doors have to be cared for.
Well, that's actually what I'm sort of interested in terms of the notion of betrayal, because of course that's what you want, is to always open all three doors.
Yes.
I'm working with the fact that all of us at one time or another fail. You know, yes. And there's the failure of, yeah, failing to open the door or being aware of that. But then there are the failures that are much bigger than that. There's, you know, there's the sexual infidelity failures. Mm-hmm. There's the, you know, the stuff that lots of people have done, although most people haven't done everything, you know, but lots of people have been, and lots of people have been subject to it. I was just writing about, you know, I wish I could say it was a rare phenomenon, but obviously it's not a rare phenomenon. People have been cheated on and people do lots of cheating. And it's not just sexual infidelity. It's all kinds of other ways of betraying someone's trust.
Yes.
And I'm curious. So how do you help someone, you know, where it isn't just that, oh, he was momentarily thoughtless and, you know, didn't hold the door for me. It's about, oh my God, he went out and had sex with someone else when our agreement is monogamy.
So when we think about the disloyalty and betrayal of stepping into an intimate relationship while you're in an intimate relationship, that's the thing that happens.
Yeah.
I've discovered that the men who cheat have fathers who cheated. I call it the cheating gene is my nickname for it.
Now see, you happen to be talking to an old statistician. Before I was a psychologist, I was a statistician. And actually I'll throw this out. And of course I don't have like hard data to back this up. What I believe to be the case, and this is based on 30 years of working with couples, right? Is that no, the proportion of men who had fathers who cheated is higher among men who cheat than among men who don't. But there are lots of men who cheat whose fathers didn't cheat. And there are lots of men who don't cheat whose fathers did cheat. You see what I mean? In other words, it's a corollary, it's a correlation factor. It may even be causal, but it's not one-to-one.
Yes, that's right.
You know, the old statistician in me just had to say that.
Okay. With, you know, a child abuser.
Well, it's the same, right.
More often exactly. Abused as children, but not every child who was abused turns out to be exactly. A child abuser.
Right. Yeah. In fact, that one is a good example, because the most people who were abused as children don't turn out to be abusers. Mm-hmm. But if you were abused as a child, you probably were abused. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're an abuser, you were probably abused as a child.
Right. Yeah.
So that's why I came up with an A person and a B person. An A person is an always person. A B person is a bucker. And so the bucker fights and mm-hmm. the always person always does what mom and dad always did. And mm-hmm. so when you have I call it a purpose home, where you grow up in a really great home and you have a lot of good values instilled. And that's what the subconscious is filled with, lots of good values. And so you don't have any sense that I need to get something improper in my life so that I can be fulfilled. I don't have that. because a purpose kid doesn't have that, but a chaos kid does. And so my scale is 10 to 0. And so I use the scale all the time. I've been using it for years and asking people about where you were raised on the scale. So 10 is mom and dad love each other and they teach the children. So that's a 10 home. And so it goes 10, 9, 8. And then at 8, 7, 6, 5, that's the twilight zone. And there the parents don't raise you. They don't really teach you. They're just trying to survive. And you just happen to be there. And so that's the twilight zone. So a little real mix about what you get. And then from 5 to 0, that's the chaos neighborhood, 5, 4, 3, 2, 0. So what is the chaos neighborhood? That's abandonment and abuse and neglect. And so I've met people on my calls over the years that they are zero chaos kids. Mm-hmm. And yet they're talking to me. They're mm-hmm. zero chaos kids. Horrible things happen to them, but they're bucking that set of instructions intensely because they're buckers. And then I've met always people who are raised in really good homes and they always expect everything to be like their home. Yeah. The same values, how you treat a friend, how you do honesty, how you give loyalty, you know, all those wonderful principles, they're in them and they're proud of them. And so what happens to those purpose kids is they expect to be given that. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand chaos kids, but sometimes they will marry the chaos kid. And the reason they will is because their parents showed them that we must take care of the less fortunate. And so they've done that with kindness and charity and giving, and they showed that, right? And so the person says, wow, I guess I need to take care of the less fortunate. Why don't I marry the less fortunate? And so they end up marrying a chaos kid.
But how does that impact the marriage, the success or failure of the marriage?
Yes, because the chaos kid has all those terrible messages that they're suppressing. Actively, when they meet that person and fall in love, they're suppressing all that energy, all those negative messages. And so that they stay down, they're bucking, they're fighting it. No, I'm not doing that. And they keep it up. But finally, they get to a point where 35, 45, they get somewhere where they just can't do it anymore. And they snap. And that just releases.
That's the midlife crisis you talk about.
Right? Yeah, and that becomes a change in personality. So I've been hearing about the change in personality. And so all the things they used to value, they literally do. The things they used to hate, rather, they now do. And so that becomes a dramatic slice. And now if a person's a purpose kid, and this chaos kid who he loved suddenly changes the personality.
Just to connect these dots for folks who may be listening, that a lot of what you're saying, and I'm sure you've heard this before, maps partially onto attachment theory. Yeah. A lot of the attachment theory language says similar things to that. You know, the folks who are like secure attachment, which is, you know, fewer than half of us, I think, as I recall. I'm always a little skeptical of theories that basically say most of us are messed up. It's like, well, then what does messed up mean? But anyway, and then the folks who are, you know, anxious attachment or chaotic attachment. And that's, I think.
Yes. So I just see it as degrees of chaos. Yeah. And so the more abandonment, the more abuse, the more neglect, the deeper you go. And then now this person who had a personality when you met them and fell in love, that personality disappears. That personality wasn't really there because that person was literally creating that personality by force, by not choosing their parents' messages. Mm-hmm. And so when they finally give up, I kind of think of in terms of Richard Schwartz's work of protectors. He talks about protectors being very strong, being very scary, very, very intimidating. And so I can picture a protector saying, why don't you get out of the way and let me run this body?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happens. Get out of the way.
So well, in the therapy, you know, in internal family systems therapy, of course, one of Dick Schwartz's approaches is to engage that protector in conversation in hopes that you can then ask, and you have to ask because you can't make them do it. You ask the protector, would you mind waiting in the waiting room?
And they'll
do it often, you know, if they trust enough that you're not going to hurt that little one they're protecting.
Yes.
Yeah, they'll wait in the waiting room, you know, kind of on call. And then you can have a conversation with the little one. And it's often amazingly.
Okay. Yeah, it is amazing. His work, like, wow, that's a breakthrough, especially when the psychology community said, you have one mind. That's all you have. Mm-hmm. And so here.
Yeah, even Freud got away from that one.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do is we're trying to get an A person who's raised in a higher home, a higher location on the purpose side of the scale. And he's now gets this person, because people I talk to who, you know, they look for midlife crisis, they find me. And so what are they doing? They're saying, I've never seen anything like this in my life. They're always shocked and appalled and everything. And they go through all the tears and all the emotions and all that. And so what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to calm them down to make them realize you have a chaos kid. So I say, it sounds like you have a chaos kid. Oh yeah, So they like don't really accept there's a chaos kid in their life. They really don't. They wanted the person that they married, the person who was expressing all that dark energy. They want that person back. And so they now like, well, what do I do? And so what do they say? I want to do something. I want to say something. They want to solve this with behavior. Mm-hmm. So my point is, you can't solve this with behavior. You have to solve this with energy. And well, what is energy? Oh, energy is what you think, what you believe, and what you feel. And when you put energy to what you think, what you believe, and what you feel, you can start changing the attitude of your mind. Mm-hmm. And that's how you start to change what your reactor is reacting to. Mm-hmm. Because when you're all frantic and crazy, she's reacting to that intensely. And yeah. When you stop being reacting and crazy, then she's now going to change her, just the way Marcia did it. Her intensity went away. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the change is. The change is, it's all in me. And so when they enter my course, they're saying, I want my wife back.
And I want to ask you in just a second about your course. I can't resist pointing out, just because it resonates my little bells, you know, the things you're saying fit very nicely with my notion. It was the title of my last book. It's not about communication. You know, you're not teaching communication technique.
Yes.
That you're saying, no, if you actually change what you're thinking and believing and feeling, what will emerge from you, because you're, the vast majority of people are actually very effective at communicating what they're thinking or feeling or believing. That's what's going to come through. That's where the change will happen.
Yeah.
It won't happen by adjusting your language appropriately or trying to come up with clever techniques. It'll happen by actually adjusting your mind, or, you know, experiencing something different, seeing things differently.
So I was on a call yesterday with a guy who knew nothing about any of these things. And what he kept doing is he kept going back to behavior, because behavior is what he knew.
Yeah.
He knew how to say things. He knew how to do things.
Mm-hmm.
Say things with your mouth, do things with your body. That's my solution. Mm-hmm. And so he couldn't get the idea of energy. Well, how could what you think, imagine, and feel, what could that do? That could do anything. The body is everything. And so that's the whole idea of the ego. The ego doesn't want you in the mind. It wants you in the body, because it really can control you, because it can get the body to do all kinds of things that you'll follow. So when you start to move into the mind, that's a whole new idea for people. This is a mind job. This is not a body mouth job.
So let's segue into that question. What do you do with folks? In other words, and how can people get in touch with you if they want to make use of what you do?
So LarryBellotta.com is where all the stuff is. Mm-hmm. So that's where they find what my ideas are, what I'm explaining at LarryBellotta.com. Mm-hmm. But what people have to know is, like, how did I latch onto the midlife crisis? I didn't latch on to the midlife crisis because I say, hey, here's a problem, midlife crisis. I should talk about that. What happened is people were coming to me and they were talking about this phenomena of my personality of my spouse has dramatically changed.
Mm.
And it's really bad. And they kept talking about it, all different kinds of perspectives, talking about this huge personality change. And so this is so years ago, before I found Richard's work, I started to ask the question, what is the mind? What is the mind? What is it? And so I'm looking for what the mind is. And I ended up writing a little paper called Pursuit of Happiness in the Subconscious Mind. And in that document, I created a explanation much simpler than Richard's. But what I said is, you have a father mind, a mother mind, and a child mind, and a family dog, and that's your family.
I like right? The family dog. That's nice.
So the dog can talk, uh-huh. Right? And so you've got your mother and father who specialize in judgment. You've got your child who specializes in fear, and you got your family dog that specializes in attack. So if you have anything going wrong, the dog's going to attack on behalf of the mother and father who are judging, on behalf of the child who's fearing. And so that's the simplicity of my of my explanation of the mind.
Kind of some echoes of Freud in there too, you know, id ego and superego. Not, it doesn't map exactly, but yeah, there's lots of ways of looking at this, right?
Yeah. So that was my explanation of the mind. And then after I did that document, then like several months later, I found Richard Schwartz and he said, he's been working at this for 40 years. I said, well,
oh yeah,
okay. he's glad you figured that out.
So you do coaching. It sounds like, tell me if I'm right, it sounds like you mostly coach individuals who are trying to deal with their relationships as opposed to like coaching couples, or do you also work?
So what I ended up with is the couples don't learn together. They don't learn together very well at all. And the reason they don't learn
together. Talking to a couples therapist, so there we go.
Well, when you talk to them as a couple, and Richard's dealing with this when he was talking about couples in his book, You Are the One You've Been Waiting For. Mm-hmm. He's talking about, he has to talk to them separately often because he can't put them together because they don't learn well together at all. So when I started to learn that, I started to realize that I need a men's course and I need a women's course. And I never want to ever mix them because I don't ever want them having relationships get started because they're in this wounded place. So I keep them separate. Mm-hmm. And so I have a men's course where the men learn together and a women's course so the women learn together. And so that's what I ended up doing, having a men and women's course. And so in this supportive environment that they create, they get so close to each other, talking to each other, that they get on planes and cars and go drive to see each other. And I didn't do that. That just happened naturally. Mm-hmm. So what the course is doing, the course is saying, what we're doing is we're leaving against energy. All of us are trying in some way, somehow to leave against energy. And so all the illustrations and all the tools and all the things I'm creating are about leaving against energy. So in my effort to try to simplify this, I created an analogy called the ocean of against energy. And so the ocean of against energy is an ocean on one half of the mind called the wrong mind. And on the right half of the mind is the beach. And so the job is get out of the ocean, get onto the beach. Mm-hmm. And the problem is the ocean doesn't want to let you go. And because the ocean doesn't want to let you go, it's very hard. So you have to decide to make the ocean angry enough to spit you out onto the beach.
You get the rip current to spit you out rather than pull you back
out. Spit you out of the beach. Yeah. So you go through this process of four steps. So acceptance, gratitude, appreciation, and quantum forgiveness. The quantum forgiveness is dealing with quantum physics, and it's, you know, the way to see forgiveness. So those four steps are packed together very tightly. And so when you do that, the ocean gets so angry at those four steps that it spits you out. And so that's how you get onto the beach, in the beach of your right mind. And so that's what you have to do. Now, your spouse doesn't have to do that. Your spouse doesn't have to learn anything. And the reason they don't is because it takes one to heal a marriage. It takes one. It does not take two. And the reason is because that person is a reactor, and you were a reactor when you started this. And now you're becoming a creator. And that's what you're doing. You're
creating. Change one and you've changed the system.
That's right. Change one.
Bless you. You mentioned Larry Bilotta. That's one L and two T's, right? For people.
BILOTTA.com. Right.
Yeah. LarryBilotta.com. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Well, I loved it. And that this was a very lively, stimulated interview. And because you're so seasoned in working with couples, that you ask lots of really good questions.
we certainly try. Well, thanks a lot, Larry. Much appreciated.
Thank you. Great being here.
Welcome back. We hope you enjoyed our interview with Larry Bilotta. He was a lot of fun and had a lot of good ideas in there. And if you need to take advantage of those ideas, you can get in touch with him. He said his website, LarryBilotta.com.
That's one L and two T's, by the way, if you're figuring out how to spell that.
Yes.
You know, we have lots of, we've done dozens of guests now, and this is episode number 139 or something like that, somewhere in that number.
Yeah.
So we've done a lot of these interviews, and they've all been fun. Mm-hmm. And if you would like to be interviewed, or if you'd like to suggest someone to be interviewed, we would love to hear from you. Just go to ctn7.com. That is our website. And that's the number 7 for those of you who are just hearing this. ctn7, where it's the number 7.com. And you can suggest whatever you'd like to suggest. Give us whatever feedback you'd like to give. We also would like you to go to your favorite podcast host and rate us and review us and do all that kind of good stuff that people do to let more people know about our podcast, which has been expanding in its listenership.
Absolutely.
All over the world. 3.5 years. We're coming up on 4 years of doing it. Well, 3.5 anyway.
3.5.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah. So we'll just briefly put in a word for our various books and stuff, which you can find out more about at ctn7.com as well.
Right. And aside from the books,
oh, yeah, of course.
Don't forget,
we've got
merch.
Those of you who are viewing this on video, which is on YouTube, by the way, or from my blog, brucechalmer.com blog, you can see the videos there too. Mm-hmm. We are holding up our beautiful Couples Therapy in 7 Words mugs in the 15 and 11 ounce sizes, where one side of the mug has our lovely logo, Couples Therapy in 7 Words. It was designed by my lovely wife here. And the other side has our inspiring motto,
Be kind, don't panic, and have faith.
Also known as The 7 Words.
The 7 Words.
So yeah, you can go. And we also have great tote bags and t-shirts.
Yeah.
And so check that out. And you can get all of that via ctn7.com. Mm-hmm. And so until next time,
remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.